Today I'm in Swindon with Mary Sanders, who is the station editor for BBC Wiltshire. Is that your correct title?
That is right, yeah.
Yes, and it's lovely to be here. I've been upstairs doing the paper review earlier this morning, so it was a nice early 5:30 start for me, but I don't mind doing it in the summer.
I know. I think it's one thing in broadcasting, you just accept that you're going to have to get up early. You know, in radio, that's where everything starts. So poor old Ben Prater on our breakfast show getting up at about 4 o'clock every morning. But I think you get used to it. Well, yeah. You get used to being tired.
Yeah, I am. I mean, because I've only ever really done the breakfast show live, and I've done a Sunday breakfast, possibly two. So it is kind of really early morning stuff.
Yeah, it is. It is really early.
So first question is, where did we first meet?
We met in the BBC Wiltshire kitchen.
We did.
If you remember this.
Yeah.
Early, about 7 a.m. I think, one morning, when you were surrounded by papers.
I was, yeah.
Notepads, pens, scribbling away. I was making a coffee.
Yeah.
Early morning coffee, always very important to start the day. And you were preparing to go on air. And I remember you telling me at that point about your podcast project. I think it was just starting.
I just applied to do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What was that, about 18 months
ago? It might have been 18 months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was a kind of wintry morning, I think.
Yeah.
It was early. So we met in that notorious place. I don't go into the kitchen really anymore.
No, I don't really. I always eat my lunch at my desk, which is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I didn't go out there very much.
But when I interviewed Ben in the kitchen, people came in and heated things up and used the microwave and all those sorts
of things. It's brilliant. We've got a hob in there. You have people making the scrambled egg, beans on toast.
But it was quite a noisy environment.
Yeah.
So do you drink tea?
I love tea. I drink a lot of tea. My staple is just classic tea as well. Like occasional bit of Earl Grey, occasional peppermint tea, but I love just Yorkshire tea. I'm quite... it's probably not fussy, but quite... I've got a bit of a schedule, I'd say. Coffee in the morning, really early, 7 o'clock, or about 6:30 on my drive-in, in my cup in the car. Then I like a cup of tea about 9 o'clock. Then it's on to coffee before 12. Anything between 12 and 4 is tea. 5 onwards is coffee until it's 8 o'clock. Then it's tea, peppermint tea after that. So that's pretty...
That's quite
I know what I'm doing, yeah.
I think that's the most extensive schedule I've been offered. Most people have had a schedule, have said, or if they're mixed, they would have a schedule.
Yeah. Well, tea's a bit more thirst quenching, isn't it? So in the afternoon, I wouldn't have coffee, I was thirsty. Tea, I would. Mm. I drink tea if I'm hot as well. Like actually, even on the hottest days here, we still find you still do tea rounds.
Mm. And what's your favourite cup of tea, either type or time?
4 o'clock in the afternoon, Yorkshire tea with a dash of milk. Quite strong, have it quite strong. My mother-in-law has something which she calls witch's wee, which is so weak and so milky, I just sort of don't really see the point.
So how do you respond to the statement, Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
Well, it was very interesting when you sent this over to me initially, because I mean, to begin with, I thought, am I in any way qualified to answer this or to have an opinion or to think about it? And then I realised actually quite a lot of aspects of my life are linked to the church, although I'm not a church goer. My father-in-law is a minister up in Scotland, and I see all the time just the incredible work that his church is doing, the amazing congregation and support and the friendships that are in their lives. I also have recently been on maternity leave, and churches in the town that I live in played a really unexpected role in support over that period. I hadn't really thought about it, and actually I found myself at different churches around the town 3 or 4 times a week sometimes, going, the groups and the support that they put on, toddler groups, bounce and rhyme groups, music groups, and it's a really incredible network. So if you'd asked me 3 years ago what I thought, my answer would have been very different, actually, that actually the church didn't play a very big part in my life. But there's been quite an awakening for me in the last couple of years about the incredible work that people are just doing every single day in their communities. That often I think people don't even realise that it's the church doing it.
Mm. So the church in the UK at the moment are the biggest single providers, kind of the church has in the wider Christian community, not the Church of England and the Baptists or whatever, but all together, the biggest providers of toddler and preschool groups,
yeah,
and debt advice.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all now.
They're two really big things that we as a Christians feel really moved to do at the moment.
I guess it's, I haven't been off work. I've always worked full time, and being on maternity leave really gave an insight into some of those, the things that are going on during the day, during the week, which I think if you're in full time work, you're often not exposed to. And so actually telling me that now doesn't surprise me at all, because there was so much activity and so much going on. When I take my little boy to those groups, you can see in all the other rooms as well, the comings and goings and the different things that are happening.
I think for me, when I went on maternity leave, I would sometimes go to the supermarket and have a cup of tea or something in the cafe, and there was a whole group of people whose lives happened in a different way during the day, who were able to have a cup of tea in the supermarket cafe at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday morning. And I felt really disconnected from work, but not necessarily really connected to them. I mean, it's quite a long time ago now, it was very different, but it was a kind of different way of being. It was quite a challenge for me.
It is very different. And that probably is the time I drank the most tea I've ever drank. Maybe more coffee, actually, because coffee does give you a bit more energy, keep you awake a bit more when I was on maternity leave. But yeah, for me, I think, you know, although we know that congregations are dwindling and my understanding is that fewer people are going to church, there's still an incredible role that's played for the people that need the support at certain times.
The reason I ask this question is because the evidence from our own church congregations is contradictory.
Is it?
So our Sundays are dropping, and in particular Sunday mornings, I find it almost impossible to encourage people to come to church on a Sunday morning. There must be people who are doing that, but I don't know how to do that in my context. But our weekday activities and our non-Sunday morning activities are all growing. So last year, in our two biggest parishes, we had more weekday regular attenders than we did Sunday attenders. And that's quite a big cultural shift, and that's happened very recently. I think we're still, as an institution, trying to work out what that means for us.
Well, everybody's lives are shifting, aren't they? You know, flexible working, people do things at different times, and actually people's schedules aren't the same, so.
And a quite high proportion of people work on Sundays now.
Yeah, of course.
So even with the potential Armageddon collapse of the retail industry, which people talking about, there are still a lot of people working on Sundays, probably more than were 10, 20 years ago, even just a few years ago. So specialist question for you is about Wiltshire.
Yeah.
So what are the best things about Wiltshire?
I think the contrasts are brilliant here. We're here sitting in the centre of Swindon at the moment, very urban, lots going on, busy. But just a couple of minutes down the road, you're into the most fabulous rural countryside, with iconic sites, Stonehenge, Avebury, the cathedral, Salisbury. So I think for me that's what is so interesting about here, rather than if you're living in a urban centre, if you're in Birmingham, Manchester, London, you don't get that contrast so easily. So I think that's what we're really lucky to have here.
Do you think in the rural parts of Wiltshire, people feel very connected to the historic past that you maybe don't get in a more city or urban type setting?
Probably almost by osmosis, actually. Whether people actively think, I am connected, look at this amazing past that we're connected to here. But if you drive past those stones every day, or the Longborough sites and those sort of things, then I think probably it becomes part of your psyche and part of the makeup of what it is to be living here.
Mm. I think it's very interesting because I think the people where I minister to in the kind of, we're basically the edge of Bath, and my children go into Bath to school, so they're effectively going from our village to a city to school. And but what in our kind of rural context, I think people do feel very connected to things which happened a long time ago. And how that actually affects them. I don't, maybe I need to go and interview people and say, how connected to this do you feel?
I mean, you can't miss it, can you? That's part of, you know, when you see you drive past the white horses or you drive past the stones.
I guess for me, because where I work, in the church buildings in which I work some of the time, they're very, very ancient. Mm. And that's just
you're part exposed
of what
to it every
what
day.
We do.
Yeah.
And we do it without even thinking about it. So I've got in the safe in one of my churches, I've got a little piece of silver, which is just effectively a plate. And I use it every week. It's just a kind of domestic piece of thing that I put bread on. And it's from 1705, and it's been used.
Amazing.
It's been used in that way.
Yeah.
Every week since then, and I don't even think about it.
Sometimes you just stop and think about who's used this, how's it been used.
It's not even particularly old for the stuff kicking around in our church building, but I think we have that kind of sense of rootedness, which other people don't get. And I think in Wiltshire it is particularly strong, because of the kind of signs of ancientness being all around us. So the next question is about podcasts versus live radio. Do you think there is actually a battle between the two, or do you think they're going to blend more into each other?
I think they can live in harmony. I think the rise of podcasting has been extraordinary, probably a little bit underestimated, I think, maybe over the last 10 years. But with the devices and the technology that everybody's got in their pocket now, and the variety of content that's available, that niche broadcasting is, I think, will become increasingly important. If you look on social media about Facebook groups or things that you follow on Twitter, you follow what you're interested in, or you join groups that you're interested in, you will listen to conversations that you are interested in. So I think, yes, there has been a huge increase, and I think that will continue because of the technology and the niche interest. I do, however, think there is always room for live broadcasting. There is nothing like being on the scene of something as it is happening, both on a national level, but also particularly important on a local level. If you live somewhere and there is something going on, you want to know what it is, why and what's happening, and you can't do that in a podcast. You miss the instant nature of what we do, and I think there will always be a hunger for that. What's important is that people want it on demand, so I want to be able to get that live sense right now. So I want to know right now what's going on there. So that's the challenge for us, to make people can access information so quickly about something that's going on, that as live broadcasters we need to be keeping up with that and able to deliver that message as quickly. But it's exciting. I think live radio has always been, you know, last 10 years has always been, will it survive? And actually audiences are holding up.
I mean there's a couple of things that I've been thinking about. One is that PM have put on this Grenfell Tower podcast,
yeah,
and I thought that was really interesting that they've decided to put it in as an add-on to their news coverage of the inquiry. Is actually they've got this dedicated podcast every day. So if you're really into that niche of wanting to listen to it, I don't know, maybe you're in housing or one of those other things, you can actually listen to that. I thought that was a very interesting tie-in.
Yeah.
But I'm also struck by a memory of mine from when the World Trade Center disaster was unfolding. So this is quite a long time ago now, and I was still working for the university in Bristol, and somebody sent a text to somebody saying, you need to say what's happening in New York. and the university internet crashed, so we couldn't load the website. Mm-hmm. And we were standing around going, well, what are we going to do? So we put on the radio.
Yeah.
And we stood round in the lab listening to the live reporting from Radio 4, because obviously they'd just cut all the schedule.
Yeah,
and we just went to it. And so that had been really important for us. And that's quite a vivid memory for me.
And I guess that's the point I make about there are moments where you just have to have live radio. I have a similar experience to you. I was in the cinema watching Moulin Rouge when that happened. And had a text message that said, you need to listen. And it's exactly what we did. We put on Five Live in the car. And there it is. And I can remember the programme, remember listening to it. So I think podcasting will grow. But I think there would always be a space for live radio. You can't beat that connection with a presenter who's there with you at that moment.
Mm. Yeah. And I love doing the live paper reviews. That's great. And I guess there's that kind of interaction with actually what's going on and the people.
Yeah.
People here.
And interaction is really important, because you can't interact as a listener with, you have no control over the direction of that programme when it's a recorded podcast.
Yeah.
But obviously you can with radio, with live radio.
So the last question is, what is your favourite thing that begins with T?
The instant action is tea. I was thinking about this, and I think it's time. Time is amazing. I work full time, and I've got an 18-month-old. I do commute a bit. Life for everybody, is very busy. And time, in the last 2 years especially, has become incredibly precious to me and to my family. Spending time at work and with my colleagues, making the time during a working day to have conversations and speak to people is precious. Time to be able to spend with my family and my little boy, to balance that juggling act between working full time and spending time with your family, and time to just to be on my own, which is incredibly rare, and just to have some headspace. That time I often fill with radio or podcasts. And actually, something I'm actively trying to do at the moment is to have some downtime that is just silent, or time where I'm taking some exercise, or time where I'm walking. We've recently got an allotment, which takes time, but actually that is forced time where it's just quiet and where you can just process. So that would be my favourite thing at the moment, I think, beginning with tea.
That's great. So I need to say thank you ever so much for letting me interview you today, Mary.
No problem at all. Thank you very much.